permite que nuestras clases por videoconferencia tengan la misma velocidad e intensidad que una clase en el aula. En tan solo un par de clics podrás acceder a la plataforma y empezar tu clase. Y recuerda, prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿A qué esperas? Entra ahora en grupobaugan.com/clases videoconferencia. Fácil, cómodo y muy eficaz. Sigue poniendo en forma tu inglés.
Lo que más miedo le da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso, Baugan ha desarrollado sus clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Baugan 100%.
Infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher.
Ah, Platón, amigo, déjame hablarte de la paradoja del ejecutivo monilingüe.
¿La qué, Aristóteles?
En el futuro, todas las mujeres y hombres importantes de la Tierra necesitarán comunicarse en la misma lengua para prosperar en sus trabajos, o de lo contrario, no podrán ascender y obtener grandes ganancias. Esa lengua se llamará inglés.
Ajá, lo comprendo, querido Aristóteles, pero sus trabajos y el quehacer cotidiano mantendrán a los hombres y a las mujeres ocupados. Y no tendrán tiempo de aprender el foráneo lenguaje. He ahí la paradoja.
Este es tu máster. Infórmate llamando al 91-133-5833. Y recuerda, también disponible en Valencia y Barcelona.
Hey guys, are you sitting around your home just wondering what to do? Well, why don't you sign up for Vaughan's English class via video conference? That's right, now you can have the best teachers in the comfort of your own home. You'll get personalized attention because there's a maximum of only 6 students per class. Give us a call, 91-133-5831. Learn English with Vaughan via video conference classes. Sign up now.
Prueba el método Baugan con nuestro curso trimestral. Elige entre nuestra modalidad presencial o por videoconferencia. Y el resto, déjanoslo a nosotros. 3 meses de listening y speaking con los mejores profesores del mercado. Entra en grupobaugan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Baugan. Para más información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833 y te ayudaremos con lo que necesites. 91-133-5833.
Esta es La Hora Extra, con Richard Baugan.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to a new edition of the Extra Hour, Tuesday's edition. It's a Tuesday, but in 2 hours' time, it will be Wednesday. So the days, as usual, tend to pass one after the other. Day after day, I continue teaching English. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade. And to tell you the truth, century after century, and millennium after millennium. Not many people can claim that possibility. But yes, I started in one decade and I'm finishing in another. I started in one century and I will finish in another. And I started in one millennium and I will finish in another millennium. Not many people start their profession in one millennium and finish it in another millennium. Yes, sir, me and all my colleagues and you as well. I'm sure you were born in the previous, most of you were born in the previous millennium. So, I started teaching in 1974 and I'm still teaching. Al pie del cañón. Yes, sir, I'll never give up. I started in the 13th century and I'm going to continue until the 23rd or 33rd century. I think by that time Spanish people will speak English well, by the 33rd century. Do you think you'll be able to speak English well by the 33rd century? In the year 3333, will you still need me? All right. In the year 3333, Capicua. Yes. Will humanity exist in the year 3333? Who knows? And it doesn't matter. I won't be around to check on that possibility. But you never know. You never know. One never knows. You never know. 10 questions. I'm ready. Richard, had Hitler already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war? No, they hadn't. Have you ever walked straight into a glass door? I think so. Yes, I have. Does rain cause erosion? Yes, it does. Are good leaders usually good communicators as well? Yes, they are. Has there been an earthquake in the news this week? No, there hasn't. Can you see the horizon if you're in the middle of a forest? No, you can't. Can you afford a new house right now? Oh, yes, I can. Did you misbehave in class when you were little? Not too much. Have you ever drawn up a shopping list? Yes, I have. Is the Far East more exotic for you than Europe? No, it's not. All right. Let's go back. Had Hitler already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war? You know, this is an interesting question, grammatically. Of course, we know that Hitler and the Nazis never occupied Great Britain. But the way the question is formulated, you get the impression that they did. The question was whether they occupied it before the U.S. entered the war or after. The sentence seems to take for granted that they ended up occupying Great Britain at one time. Let me repeat. Had Hitler already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war? Now, in Spanish, you would say, ya había Hitler ocupado Gran Bretaña para cuando entró Estados Unidos en la guerra. It seems to insinuate that they did, in fact, occupy Great Britain, which is not true. So the sentence is strange. No, Hitler hadn't already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war. In fact, Hitler never managed to occupy Great Britain. Nobody in history has managed to successfully conquer Great Britain except the Normans, William the Conqueror and the Normans. Now, other peoples have crossed and occupied parts of Great Britain and had a strong influence. The Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes, the Vikings. Julius Caesar crossed and twice and managed to win a battle or two. The Romans managed to occupy Great Britain pretty far, all the way up to almost to Newcastle, where you have the Hadrian's Wall. But that English Channel has protected Great Britain to a large extent throughout two millennia of history. But the most recent attempts to invade Great Britain were first on the part of Napoleon Bonaparte. He massed an enormous army in Boulogne and in Calais to cross the English Channel. But he decided against it. He decided not to. He decided against it. And then 130 years later, Adolf Hitler entertained the same possibility, the same idea. And he decided not to and turned east, just like Napoleon. Napoleon turned east. He realized that crossing the English Channel with an enormous army was going to be a logistic nightmare, and so he turned east towards the Austro-Hungarian Empire and Prussia and defeated them. And Hitler turned east and invaded the Soviet Union, much to his downfall. But They didn't manage, neither one of them, but Hitler would have probably crossed the English Channel and invaded Great Britain if his Air Force had managed to control the air. But they lost in the famous Battle of Britain. The Messerschmitts were not able to hold their own. Aguantar, mantener el tipo, to hold their own against the Spitfires and other aircraft. Piloted by brave, semi-aristocratic, some brave British pilots, Canadian pilots, and Polish pilots. There were quite a few Polish pilots who were piloting the Spitfires, and I can't remember the name of the other plane. And they managed to make life miserable for the incoming Messerschmitts and the Air Force of Hermann Göring. It's an interesting story. Had Hitler already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war? No, he hadn't. Great Britain. You know, the British people usually refer to Great Britain simply as Britain. I find that word ugly, Britain. I don't know why. I find it. The UK sounds okay. The United Kingdom, sounds too pretentious. But this, the two letters, UK, sounds good to me. And Great Britain sounds good to me. But not Britain. When I hear the word Britain, I think of the lowest moments of the British economy in the 1960s, 1970s, before Margaret Thatcher came to power, when it was constant strikes, constant problems, and the economy was declining steadily. Everybody called it Britain. And somebody, I think Thatcher, said, let's put great back into Britain. I like the expression Great Britain, but not Britain. But that's what they use now. Here in Britain, even the politicians say Britain. Very few. I don't know if they say Great Britain. I don't know. I've never asked that question. I could ask on YouTube or on the web, do the British call Britain? Britain. B-R-I-T-N. Britain. Great Britain. I don't really know. The term Britain is widely used as a common name for the sovereign state of the United Kingdom, or UK for short. The United Kingdom includes three countries on the largest island, which can be called the Island of Britain or Great Britain. These are England, Scotland, and Wales. I don't know what they use the most. I don't know. But it sounds cheap for me to say Britain. I don't like it. I have a lot of respect for the British, a lot of admiration for the British, including the Scottish and the Irish. I have the people in that, even though the Irish are Celtic, as well as the Welsh and the Scottish, I have a lot of admiration for those people. They've achieved a lot. But nevertheless, let's go on. Have you ever walked straight into a glass door? I think I did once, but I can't remember when nor where. To walk into a glass door, you know, when you're walking and you don't even notice the door is there. Boom! And it hurts when you walk into a glass door. I think it happened to me once, but I can't remember. To walk straight into, derecho, andando derecho, boom, contra el cristal, uno puerta de cristal. Because you don't notice, it's, you know, you just keep walking. Sometimes, a lot of people do that. Walking into a glass door. Walking into a glass door. It's dangerous, man. Yes, walking into a glass door. How to keep people from walking into a glass door. Apply a decal or sticker. Decal is calcomanía. How do you say decal? Calcomanía, I think, is the word you use. Decal. Decal. D-E-C-A-L. I think it's calcomanía. Decal. Yes, calcomanía. Sticker. Un sticker. Un calco. Pegar. Decal. You put a decal on the glass door. Maybe. Or a sticker. Use a window shade or a curtain. Paint, frost, or tint the glass. Strengthen the glass. I don't know. But walking into a glass door. What does it feel like to walk through a glass door? I don't know. So, I've never walked through a glass door. I've walked into a glass door, which means to chocar contra. Boom. But I think it's only happened to me once. Does rain cause erosion? Of course, yes it does. Rain and wind. The wind causes erosion, and rain causes erosion. The verb is to erode. It's interesting. You have the noun erosión in Spanish, y el verbo erosionar. And we have erosión y erodar, to erode. It's like evolve and evolution. You said la evolución, evolucionar. But we have evolution into evolve, erosion into erode. And so, yes, rain erodes the ground, the mountains. You know, the Rocky Mountains the Alps in Central Europe someday will be flat because over time, over millions and millions and millions of years, the elements erode the land. And so the Alps will disappear. The Rockies will disappear. The Andes will disappear. The Himalaya will disappear. Yes, the Sierra Nevada will disappear because of erosion over maybe 800 million years. It's a lot of rain. But you never know. Also, new mountains will appear. The tectonic plates will crash together and create new mountains. So we'll see. But does rain cause erosion? Yes, rain causes erosion. La lluvia causa erosión. Rain causes erosion. Mountains and valleys and hills and dales, they erode because of the rain and because of the wind as well. Wind causes erosion as well. Are good leaders usually good communicators as well? Yes, usually they are. Well, to be a good leader, is it a prerequisite to be a good communicator? Excuse me? To be a good leader, is it a prerequisite to be a good communicator? When you say prerequisite, prerequisito, do you mean in order to be a good leader, you need to be a good communicator? Is that correct? No, it's not. A good leader doesn't need to be a good communicator necessarily, although it's probably a little more difficult. A good leader can lead by example. A warrior can become a leader because the other soldiers admire this warrior as a great warrior and they will follow him. But he doesn't need to be a good communicator. But it depends on your definition of communication, because a good leader has to communicate in some way, through words or through deeds. If you communicate through deeds, it's just as effective and maybe more than communicating through words. Although it is true that people are very sensitive and very impressionable when seductive words or powerful words are used. For women, they say that the second sexual organ of a woman is her ear. For men, I don't think so, but men are still. Still means aún así, nevertheless, influenced by eloquent words, powerful words. And these are used all the time. the powerful words. In the old times, every leader spoke to its army, now we go into battle, etc. Even today, before a football game or during the halftime, sometimes the coach speaks to the players to fire them up, to do their best. So, yes, good leaders are usually good communicators, verbal communicators now. But I think all good leaders are good communicators in words or in deeds. Deeds means in hechos, palabras y hechos. So, if you want to be a good leader, you have to communicate effectively in some way, through your actions and deeds, or through your words, or both. You need to set an example. Dar ejemplo, en inglés se dice fijar un ejemplo. To set an example. Siempre un ejemplo. En español se dice dar ejemplo. Decimos fijar un ejemplo. To set an example. Sentar un ejemplo. Como el sentar precedente, pues sentar un ejemplo. To set. Sentar precedente is to set a precedent. To set a precedent. Suena a presidente, ¿no? Pero presidente es president. Zaragoza, Zarzuela, president. Precedente is precedent. It's a different sound. Precedent. To set a precedent, to set an example. So if you can set an example and at the same time communicate verbally well, you will be a leader. People will want to follow you. Because most people don't want to be leaders, or they are not capable of being leaders, but they want to follow. They want to be emotionally excited. And good leaders can do that. They can fire up the people. To fire up means to make them ready to conquer the world. Has there been an earthquake in the news this week? No, there hasn't. There hasn't been an earthquake in the news this week, as far as I know. I'm sure there have been seismic movements. Interesting, in Latin America, they never say terremoto. And they don't say seismo. They say sismo. Un sismo. No seismo. But they don't say terremoto. It's interesting. Earthquake. Tremor. Son temblores. Más pequeños, we call them tremors, tremores, tremors, tremors, tremors. About 2 months ago, there were a series of tremors in Galicia, especially in the province of Orense and Lugo. There were tremors, tremors, but no earthquakes. Spain is usually not prone to earthquakes. The countries that are prone to earthquakes are countries around the Pacific Rim. Rim, escrito rim, R-I-M. Rim is el aro del baloncesto. El aro is the rim. But rim also is el borde del vaso, la parte, that's the rim of the glass. And the Pacific Rim starts down in New Zealand, goes up through New Guinea, through the Philippines, up to China, Japan, the Korean Peninsula, to the Aleutian Islands, and to Alaska, and then turns down western Canada, California, Mexico, then into Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Chile. It's un aro. It's a kind of a rim. They call it the Pacific Rim. That's the most active area. But there are other areas as well. There's a fault line that passes through the Atlantic. It crosses through southeastern Spain, Almeria and Murcia and Granada and this area. It's also affected Lisbon, the capital. Well, it affected Portugal. And then it passes through Italy, Greece, Turkey, and then Iran and Afghanistan, they suffer earthquakes as well. Pakistan, there are a lot of areas in the world that are earthquake prone. But I don't know what percentage. What percentage of the earth is earthquake prone? Prone escrito, earthquake prone. Which countries have the most earthquakes? Where do earthquakes occur? Well, let's look first the countries with the most earthquakes. All right. It doesn't say. It doesn't say. Let's see. If I can, where can I search for an earthquake catalog for Pat? Which country has the most earthquakes? Aquí viene. Inoviene. All right. Which country? The most is Japan. The whole country is a very active seismic area. And they have the densest seismic network in the world. So they record many earthquakes. Indonesia as well. All right. Fiji, Indonesia, Tonga. All right. Very active. All right. China and Iran are also very active. Turkey is also worth mentioning. But then Italy as well. Italy suffers earthquakes. And the United States. And of course, Chile. All of the countries along the Rocky Mountains and the Andes, which is basically the same kind of cordillera. It starts in Alaska and goes down through Western Canada, the Canadian Rockies, the American Rockies, and then into Western Mexico, and then it goes out into the Pacific, and then starts again in Western Colombia, Ecuador, Peru. It's very seismic activity. But it's interesting that in most countries they say un sismo, but here in Spain you say seismo. Let me look up the word earthquake. Earthquake. Earthquake, terremoto, temblor, sismo, seismo. All right. So, which one do you use, seismo or sismo? I know that in Peru they say sismo, and I know that in Mexico they say sismo. All right, quake. Now, we have, you say replicas. After an earthquake, there are usually smaller earthquakes that you call in Spanish replicas. And we call them aftershocks. Aftershocks. O sea, choques posteriores. Aftershocks. Okay. And so they have that. Almost every earthquake has aftershocks. And sometimes the aftershocks are pretty big, pretty important. But I have to go. I'll be right back after the break.
Ahora tu profesor Vaughan desde tu casa, la oficina. Tu profesor Vaughan en clases telefónicas. Ahora más fácil y cómodo. Consigue uno de los tres planes de formación en grupovaughan.com/clases telefónicas.
Nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia es la opción perfecta para perfeccionar tu inglés en poco tiempo y sin perder tiempo en incómodos desplazamientos. 100% online, por videoconferencia, desde cualquier lugar. Grupos de 6 personas como máximo. Horario de mañana o tarde. Prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿Qué más quieres? Nosotros no podemos darte más facilidades. Ahora te toca a ti. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate sobre nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia.
Haz una pausa y disfruta. Mejorando.
Aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 911-133-5833. 911-133-5833.
Mucha gente nos pregunta si es posible que un método online para aprender inglés funcione de verdad. Hoy en nuestro especial Vaughan Key Points hablamos de este tema con nuestro profesor y director de innovación, Richard Brown.
La clave de nuestro método online es la motivación. Hemos diseñado un curso que realmente engancha en cada nivel, te motiva y reta para que avances de nivel. Pero la verdadera clave son los profesores Vaughan. Su método de enseñanza es lo que realmente nos diferencia. Los cursos online Vaughan cuentan con los mismos profesores apasionados que desde hace más de 40 años nos han hecho diferentes. Descubre las ventajas de nuestro método online probándolo. Así que os invito a entrar en grupovaughan.com y poneros a prueba.
¿Quieres recibir clase conmigo? Pues si quieres, tienes 200 horas de clase de inglés gratis en RTVE a la carta. Ve a Google y escribe Vaughan RTVE a la carta. Y presto, ahí verás más de 370 clases de media hora y cada día se añade una más. Desde principiante hasta avanzado, te llevo por todo lo necesario de mi idioma. Píldoras potentes de inglés. También hay libros de texto que acompañan al curso, pero son opcionales. Con o sin ellos, aprenderás mucho inglés o mejorarás mucho tu dominio. Pruébalo en Google. Vaughan RTV a la carta. Ahí nos veremos.
Lo que más miedo da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso Vaughan ha desarrollado las clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%. Contrata las clases telefónicas de inglés de Vaughan para tu empresa. Llama al 911-335-831 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
¿Quieres apuntarte a un curso de inglés y no sabes cuál escoger? ¿Por qué no probar nuestro curso trimestral de Vaughan? Son solo 3 meses, no pierdes nada y te aseguramos que vas a ganar mucho. 3 meses en los que podrás ver cuál es tu nivel real de inglés. 3 meses en los que trabajarás tu listening y speaking en todo momento. 3 meses en los que subirás ese nivel tanto que, pues, que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Extra con Richard Vaughan.
Hello and welcome back. All right, our second half hour of today's Tuesday edition of the Extra Hour. Questions, more questions. Yes. Do you and your sister like mushrooms? Excuse me? Do you and your sister like mushrooms? I don't, but my sister does. Hmm? No, I don't, but she does. You mean you don't like mushrooms? Yeah. I said I don't, but she does. Who? My sister. You asked me if my sister and I like mushrooms. I don't, but she does. Oh, okay. You mean your sister likes mushrooms? Yes. Will you and your sister be here tomorrow? Be here. I will, but my sister won't. Excuse me? I said I will, but she won't. You will what? Be here tomorrow. I will, but she won't. She won't what? I will be here, but she won't be here. Your question is, repeat the question, please. Will you and your sister be here tomorrow? I will, but she won't. Oh, okay. Would you and your sister like to be politicians? I wouldn't, but my sister would. I wouldn't, but she would. You mean your sister would like to be a politician? I think so, yeah. I wouldn't, but she would. Have you or your sister ever been to Hawaii? I haven't, but my sister has. I haven't, but she has. Really? Yeah. She went to Hawaii when she was maybe 14, 15, with her grandmother. Yeah. Fanny, with her grandmother. She was probably, let's see, she was probably 15. She was old enough to like boys and things like that. Maybe she was 16. I don't know. I was 3 years younger than, I'm 3 years younger than she is, so let's see, I was 12 or 13. And they took a ship. As far as I can remember, they took a ship. Maybe from San Francisco or from L.A. to Hawaii. They took a ship. I don't know. How long does it take? How long does it take to sail from Los Angeles to Hawaii? Between 2 and 3 weeks? No way. No way. That must be on a sailboat. To go from Los Angeles to Hawaii by ship. All right. 2 to 3 weeks. No way. Come on. It's not that far. Well, it's pretty far. But I think it only takes about 5 days. Let's see. On a cruise ship. Well, on an ocean liner. Ocean liner. A cruise ship is for... let's see. On an ocean liner. It takes... I don't believe it. It says it takes between 2 to 3 weeks to sail from Los Angeles to Hawaii. High-performance boats are able to reach Hawaii within a week. Well, they went by ship. Let's see. You'll have lots of time to practice saying aloha if you decide to take a boat from Hawaii to the mainland. It's over 2,500 miles from the West Coast to Hawaii. All right. So, cruise options. I don't want to take a quad. I would love to go to Hawaii. I've never been. Maybe she flew, but I'm pretty sure she went by boat. I'm pretty sure. I'm looking at different websites to find out. Let's see. Sadly, no. You can take a cruise ship from various points along the west coast of North America. It's about 4.5 days at sea each way. Ahora sí. All right. 4.5 days. Ahora tiene sentido. So... 4.5 days. I said 5 days, so I'm sure about five. It took her about 5 days. I think she had a very good time. But I don't know. And my grandmother, let's see, if I was 12, that means it was in 1964. And in 1964, my grandmother was 64, 74, 75. My grandmother was about 75 years old. But strong as an ox. Tan fuerte como un buey, se dice en inglés. Más fuerte que un toro. We say un buey. As strong as an ox. Yes, sir. And so they went together, just the two of them, my daughter and my grandmother. Digo, my daughter, my sister, my grandmother. That's funny. More, they were kind of similar, I think, in certain ways. I was very different. Even though my grandmother taught me how to fish. Okay, let's go on. So, have you or your sister ever been to Hawaii? Well, I haven't, but she has. Did you and your sister attend the University of Texas? I did, but she didn't. I did, but she didn't. Were you and your sister born in Houston? I was, but she wasn't. She was born in Austin. Can you and your sister play tennis? I can, but she can't. Could you and your sister run fast when you were kids? I could, but she couldn't. She could swim fast. She was a good swimmer. Yeah, she won some ribbons or medals swimming when she was about 10 and 11 years old, 12 years old, when she was pre-puberty. So, whatever. Can you see the horizon if you're in the middle of a forest? No, I can't. Can you afford a new house right now? Yes, I can. Did you misbehave in class when you were little? No, I didn't. Have you ever drawn up a shopping list? Yes, I have. Is the Far East more exotic for you than Europe? No, it's not. Do you and your sister like mushrooms? Yes, we do. No, she does, but I don't. Is the world essentially a valley of tears? Hey, I love that question. No, it's not. Are you a big coffee drinker? No, I'm not. Is a right angle 90 degrees? Yes, it is. Was Socrates a famous Brazilian football player? Yes, he was. Can you tell by the way they speak if someone is from London? No, I can't. No, I can't. Well, yeah. I can tell by the way they speak if someone is from East London, usually. Okay. But from the rest of London, I can't tell. You know, more and more, I'm starting to pick out certain ways of speech from Great Britain. There's so many different ways. The people from Devon, and maybe Cornwall, from Devon especially, because that's where David Waddell is from, and he has a special way of speaking that I capture. Ah, that person is speaking exactly like Waddell. He must be from Devon, from Exeter. And then to listen to Ximena, she sounds like high-class, posh London. In fact, she grew up next to, very near, Wimbledon, or the tennis complex of Wimbledon. So she speaks Wimbledon English. Very, very posh English. But not Queen's English. Queen's English is extremely posh. Oh, darling, it's so good to have you here. I can't emulate it to save my life. But in any case, the question is if I can tell by the way they speak if someone is from London. Not usually. But let's go back. Can you see the horizon if you're in the middle of a forest? Well, if you climb to the top of a tree, yes. If you climb to the top of the tallest tree in the forest, you can see the horizon. But if you don't climb to the top of the tallest tree in the forest, then you can't see the horizon. You can't see the what? The horizon. The what? The horizon. What's that? Well, it's the horizon, el horizonte. Ando. ¿Cómo le dices? Horizon? No, horizon. No, horizon no. Eso es un coche de hace 40 años. Un Talbot Horizon. I remember that. Chrysler Horizon. Horizon. Lost horizon. The sun comes up in the east on the over the horizon and it sets on the western horizon. Horizon. Now, if you're in the middle of a forest, you can't see the horizon. But how far can a dog run into the forest? What do you mean? How far can a dog run into a forest? ¿Hasta qué punto puede entrar un perro en el bosque? Yeah. How far can a dog run into the forest? It's curioso. The question in English is structured so differently from the structuring of the question in Spanish. ¿Hasta dónde puede entrar? ¿Hasta qué punto puede entrar un perro en el bosque o en un bosque? How far? We say, ¿cuán lejos? ¿Cómo de lejos? How far can a dog run into Entré corriendo. How far can a dog run into the forest? I don't know. Halfway. Why only halfway? Because after halfway, the dog isn't running into the forest. It's running out of the forest. Oh, yeah, that's true. Hasta el punto medio. Después está saliendo, no entrando al bosque. Gotcha. Gotcha. I have got you. Gotcha. Means, ya entiendo. Ya te entiendo. Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. So, if you're in the middle of a forest, you can't see the horizon, okay? Hey, Richard, can you afford a new house right now? Well, if I had to buy one, yeah, I can afford it. I don't have any debts. So I can buy a house. Well, it depends on what kind of house. You know, if you want me to buy the Palacio Real, I can't buy it. But can you imagine? I was talking about this on TV, on my TV show yesterday, well, a few days ago. And it was, if I made an offer to the Spanish state, al Estado Español, because really the government, I imagine the government would make the decision, the Ministry of Culture perhaps. But I think even the Zarzuela Palace would be involved in the decision, and maybe the Tribunal Constitucional. If I made an offer to buy the Las Meninas, I want Las Meninas on the wall of my living room. I want to place, well, on the wall, it's too big. I want to set up the Meninas in my living room. So I'm willing to buy it from the Spanish state. Now, would they sell it to me? I don't know. If I offered them 10 billion euros, do you think the Spanish state, I don't think the Spanish state would sell me Las Meninas. Not even for 10 billion. 10 billion son 10 mil millones. Si fueron 100 mil millones. Imagine offering the king and Pedro Sánchez and everybody the 100 billion dollars. The entire fortune of Bill Gates, for example. And because I want the Meninas in my house. Las Meninas. Do you think the Spanish state would sell it to me? My God. 100 billion. That's a lot of money. I mean, you know how much money that would be for each Spaniard? Yes. If it's, let's see if I can figure out how much it is. 100. I'm going to calculate this. Just a second. Let me set up the Excel sheet. Let's see. All right, here we have, let's see, 100 million, 100 billion. All right, okay, 100 billion euros. All right, now there are 47 million people in Spain. Now, if we just gave the money to the people, how much would that be for each person? Not much. 2,000 euros per person. Okay, that wouldn't be too much. So I'd have to offer more. Yes. And to buy the Palacio Real. I'll buy it. I want to live there. Okay, I imagine they wouldn't sell it to me. For me, Las Meninas is worth more than the Palacio Real. I mean, what's worth more? You know, imagine the United States wants to buy the Palacio Real of Madrid and to establish the American embassy there. And they want to buy Las Meninas. And Spain is forced under pressure to sell one of them. And the United States makes an offer of one, let's say 200 billion, 200 mil millones, 200 billion euros. Now, would you rather sell, I mean, if you had to sell one of the two, Las Meninas by Velázquez or the Palacio Real, which one would you sell? If I were Spanish, I would sell the Palacio Real and keep the Meninas. I think it's a brilliant piece of artwork. And for me, it's worth more. Anybody can build the Palacio Real. I mean, the Palacio Real is a brilliant piece of architecture. It's beautiful, admirable. But it can be rebuilt. It can be rebuilt. If it were destroyed totally by an air raid, or by an earthquake that just destroys it completely, it could be rebuilt. But the Meninas cannot be repainted. It can't be painted from, if it were destroyed completely in a fire, for example, in the Prado Museum, I don't think we would not be able to replicate it. And it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same. But nevertheless, I imagine there are painters today, especially the realist, hyper-realistic painters who can paint the Meninas again. But I think the spirit, the duende, as you say, the spirit of the painting would not be the same. There's a spirit to it because the person who painted the Meninas was actually in the court of Philip IV trying to paint the royal couple, trying to paint a portrait of the royal couple, and there were kids playing in the, and so he painted them and the dog and the dwarf and placed the royal couple in the background in a mirror with a man opening the door. It's a very interesting, curious painting, Las Meninas. It's one of my favorite in the world, Las Meninas. It's my favorite painting in the Prado. Another painting I like very much is the Borrachos de Velázquez. That painting I like. Goya as well. But Velázquez I like better. And Las Hilanderas. And also the... I can't remember the name of the painting where... Vulcano. Hephaestus. I can't remember the name of that painting. Goya of Vulcan. If I can find it. The Forge. La Forja. Yes, this is it. La Fragua de Vulcano. I like that painting. Because an angel comes in and tells Vulcan that his wife, Aphrodite, has been unfaithful. Or is in the process of being unfaithful. It's an excellent painting. The lighting and everything. So, it's quite interesting. And you look at the face of Vulcan. You know, Vulcan was the brother of Zeus and Poseidon. And he's there looking at the angel when the angel passes on this information, your wife is being unfaithful. You know, and the surprise on his face. And to look at the faces, these are faces very typical of that period in Spain. And Velázquez took the faces of Spanish people. And they're the same as faces today. But nevertheless, it's very nice. It's a very, very good painting. It's one of my favorite. And of course, Las Hilanderas. So, Las Hilanderas is a very interesting painting. But it's the use of light. Of course, the master of light was Rembrandt. But Velázquez used light very, very well. It's interesting that there are two points of light. And then, of course, if you look at the painting by Velázquez of the La Rendición de Breda. it's really interesting, that painting, because if you really want, you notice that one side, which is the Spanish army, all of the lances are in the air. And the Dutch army, well, none of the lances are in the air. They have clearly lost. And mayor of Breda, or the commander is giving the Spanish commander the key to the city. But now the biggest and the most important part of the painting is the trasero de un caballo, the the backside of a horse is the biggest part of the painting. And you would wonder why. Why is that? So it's interesting that maybe that's Velázquez's opinion about war, or opinion about the insistence of the Spanish to stay in the Low Countries. I don't know. I really don't know. I've never looked into this. I noticed and I said, why is the backside of a horse so much part of the painting? I can't find it here. And I'm reading while I'm speaking, but I can't find the reference to the backside of a horse. Maybe during the break. Well, after I finish, who knows? But in any case, I would never, I imagine Spain would never sell Las Meninas, no matter what. Even they've offered $1 trillion. $1 trillion, €1 trillion, billón español de euros. I even think the Spanish state wouldn't sell Las Meninas. All right. Hey, Richard, did you misbehave in class when you were a little boy? Not too much. I wasn't the perfect student. I wasn't an angel in class. Sometimes I misbehaved. The teacher gave me a C in conduct. And my mother was, what? You got a C in conduct? Because una de las notas era conducta, comportamiento. When I was in maybe 6 years old, 7 years old, and 8 years old, it was in conduct. And I got a C. I think it was in second grade. I remember my mother's surprise when I took the report card home and she looks at it and said, a C in conduct? You're talking too much in class, Ricky.